Yo, yo, yo. Welcome in, everybody. My name is Joe Idoni. I am back from the Players Championship. I'm ready to go once again. This week, we have another fantastic event for the final leg of the Florida Swing. I've got a fellow Floridian and local guy to help me break down the Valspar Championship this week. Welcome to the show. This is Preferred Lines.
Full nine iron for him. They're going to go nuts when he hits this thing.
Amazing. Yesterday's price is not today's price.
Yesterday's price on major championships for one Scottie Scheffler, not today's price. Welcome into Preferred Lines. This is your weekly golf gambling pod. Like I mentioned, my name is Joe Idoni. At Tour Picks is a place that you can find me on Twitter or X or however you want to refer to it. This is the Preferred Lines podcast. If you're checking this out right now on Twitter, I would really super duper love for you to jump on over to the YouTube page. I am nearing my goal of 1,000 subs. Once I get to that point, I think it's like you unlock a secret, the next level of YouTube, where hopefully I can get some more features and they start to promote the channel a little bit more. Would mean a whole heck of a lot to me if you would go over and sign up on that page so that you get notifications each and every time we go live to bring in the great content weekly that we do. This show, I should also mention, is proudly presented by the great folks over at Rotoballer. The team at Rotoballer got me into the Players Championship last week. I was in the media center. I was quite out of place. I'll talk some more about that at the end of the show, but definitely got my feet wet. Definitely feel like it was a totally awesome experience, and the team at Rotoballer is producing a ton of great content each and every week. Model Maniac, Spencer Aguiar, my boy Flag Hunting Pod, which if you have not checked that out, is an awesome podcast. He's super analytical and goes really into base, and it's quite entertaining as well. And of course, the great Joe Nicely, myself included, all putting out content for you weekly. The promo code, if you want to sign up over there for all the premium side stuff, is Lines, L-I-N-E-S. That's what you use. That's how they know I sent you. Now, let's shift gears. Let's bring on a guest to help us break down what we saw last week and what we're going to see this week. Rejoining me once again on the show, just absolutely slaying the DraftKings Rainmakers contest each and every week, as well as the regular contest, fresh off a $50,000 winner and Copperhead's very own. Welcome back to the show, Jason Roslin. What's up, buddy?
What's up, Joe? Happy to be back. Am I one of the only three-time guests that you've ever had on this show? I mean, I got to be one of the only ones at this
point. You're absolutely in a very special category of people that I enjoy talking to and like to have on each and every year. And congratulations is due to you, my friend. I'm pulling up this screenshot now from just a few weeks ago. One of the many big time caches that you've had over the years. How special was this one? Had you been waiting for it for a while? And how nice was it to get that Sunday sweat come through?
Yeah, totally. It was awesome. I love transparency. You know, you've been talking to me and communicating with me for a while, so I'm all about it. And be honest, like the last year roughly has been pretty difficult. No big scores. And, you know, playing the volume GPP MME game, you know, if you don't have a big score, you can get down in a hole pretty quickly. So this one was great. You start off the season with it. Luckily, I've had Rainmakers to kind of, bolster some of those returns, you know, a little bit more predictable in a way, I guess, so to speak, since you can kind of make your own lineup. But still, nonetheless, yeah, that was awesome. That was super sweet. I'm a big Patrick Cantlay fan. Love the Valspar for that reason. I actually, you know, kind of figured out who Cantlay was.
Yeah,
all
me too.
Years ago, you know, it was his second event back from his major medical and went down against Adam Hadwin there and lost, but still a great event. That's where I learned about Cantlay. And sure enough, it was Cantlay's putt on 18 at the Genesis that sent me over the top for that 50K. It didn't mean anything to him, but I promise you, it definitely meant something to me.
Yeah, full circle, baby, on PC. I remember that Hadwin year. I had a nice Hadwin ticket, but I do remember the Cantlay story about the car accident and everything that came about, and what an incredible, like, young budding career he had before that happened. So to see him sort of come full circle now, be one of the faces of the United States professional golf in terms of Ryder Cup, President's Cup teams, be one of the faces and top five players on the PGA Tour. Really special to see him sort of evolve into that new role. And speak to me a little bit before we jump to what we saw last week of the players about your evolution in sort of creating contests around DraftKings Rainmakers, because you were one of the first people to do it. You're one of the most consistent people to do it. And you're one of the people that I think the majority of us who aren't exactly sure what it is look to for guidance sort of in this space, because you mentioned you've had a lot of success in it.
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, what I like personally is DraftKings. What's up, Joe?
Yeah, there he is.
Joe LaPoro, he's actually my club manager at Cypress Run here locally, so glad to see him on. The thing about Rainmakers that I like, again, it's a little bit more predictable because you decide how much you want to spend and the guys that you buy around it. So I'll take a little step back. DraftKings first marketed the game as an NFT game, right?
Yeah.
Said that basically the cards are NFTs, and they tried to pull in that market. I actually think they did an okay job, but I think they alienated some of us DFSers in the beginning that didn't get into NFTs. I'm one of them. I don't own any NFTs other than what, you know, these Rainmaker cards. But now DraftKings is starting to call them digital trading cards, which is what I think they are more than they are NFTs. Okay. Obviously, these digital trading cards, less collectible value than, say, our traditional Upper Deck paper cards or something like that. But the value you get out of them is entering them into daily fantasy style contests where you can win money. Nice part is it runs very similar to PGA DFS. Scoring is all the same. It's just you get to pick your own six golfers. Now, again, a little intricacies. There's rarity tiers, just like in trading cards, right? You know, we have the refractors, non-refractors, very similar. Yeah. Scenario to the Rainmakers game. So yeah, it's a learning curve, but once you learn it, I can assure you, if you like PGA DFS, you probably like this as well.
Well, that's awesome, man. Continue to keep educating people on how that game works. It's really fun to see sort of from the outside looking in. And I'm sure, like, speaking of the players, if you could have picked like six really good players to jump in your lineup, they were probably all near the top of the leaderboard. You had Scheffler, you had Brian Horn. Yeah, the last two major champion winners. You had the U.S. Open before Wyndham Clark and Matthew Fitzpatrick making a little run there. You had Rory, first-round leader. You had Xander looking to break through. And all at the end of everything, it's a Scottie Scheffler injured Sunday 64 that takes it down. I mean, what's there to stop this guy if it's not a little slip disc in the upper neck?
Nothing. A cold putter, honestly, a cold putter. It's pretty much, we've seen in everybody that's tuned in, and most of the people that tune into your show, I'm sure already know this, the statistics are absolutely off the charts. We're talking about fourth best streak of golf in all time, just behind Tiger, obviously. Well, maybe actually not just behind Tiger. He's a full stroke still behind Tiger. But behind Vijay Singh when Vijay was going through that run, and then Ernie Els had a period of time where he was slightly better. According to Data Golf, and I believe all of their stuff, they do some great stuff with this kind of realm. And I'm not sure that it's going to stop. I mean, you see, even when he's injured, yes, he missed more greens, especially on Saturday, especially on Friday. You know, I watched every shot. I'm sure you did as well. Yeah. You were there trying to bounce back and forth, which we'll talk about slow play in a second. Again, the guy has every part of his game. We talk about this a lot, right? It's not just, oh, he relies on his ball striking or relies on his short game. He's got every part of it. And when that putter, he's 55th, you know, in the last couple of weeks, that's fine. He's going to win more than he's going to lose if that continues.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't be more impressed with the guy. I mean, I know Friday particularly, I was right there when standing next to Sean Martin when he sort of sent out the tweet where he was getting the work on his neck, and everyone like was all eyes on Scotty for like the next four holes. Luckily, like you mentioned, the slow play. So he was playing with JT and Ricky, and JT and Ricky are fast players. And Scotty's, I would say Scotty is slow around the greens and on the greens, but he's not slow like on the tee box. And, you know, it was Wyndham Clark and Brian Harman behind them, and their group was way behind, which luckily gave sort of Scotty this time essentially in between shots. And he actually deferred to JT and Ricky to hit first in some situations, which was awkward, to sort of get this work done. But what you saw is he lost significant ball speed. His swing kind of changed. But how impressed I was for a guy to drop 8 to 10 miles per hour in, you know, ball speed and still be able to go out there and shoot 4 under pars when you have basically nothing at a course that was eating people up. And then he plays the weekend and just basically said, I'm not making a bogey out here, Jason. Like this, especially on a course like this, like it was never really a threat to like make a bogey. Like there was never like he had to hole a 25 footer for par. It just appeared like he couldn't make the mistake that so many other players were making, particularly down the stretch. And when that putter, if he's brushing in 6 footers, like the world is in trouble.
Definitely. Even if you want to bring back our boys, Cammy Smith and John Rahm and Brooks Koepka, it ain't going to matter. I'm sorry. I like these not guys. I'm a big Cam Smith stan. You know that. Maybe I have my wars with Koepka. You know, I just want Brooks to be Brooks all the time. I love watching Brooks play at majors, but he can't do it at other events. That's fine. But still, these guys aren't going to compete with Scotty the way he's playing right now. Again, no offense to them, but he's just that much better.
So I wanted to ask you about the runners-up. Brian Harman, Xander Schauffele, and Wyndham Clark. Which of those three players were you most impressed with and most optimistic with regarding the future and upcoming major championship season? Like, who do you think has the best incoming summer of those three guys?
Yeah, so let's start with Wyndham Clark. I think that the street is still a little bit slow to get behind how good this guy really is, right? We've seen him now. The signature events, he is turned into a mini Brooks Koepka. I know I've seen that name float around the industry a little bit. Jeff Feinberg kind of started that trend. And he's absolutely right. The guy is showing up in big events all the time. And I just don't think he's getting as much credit. I checked around the industry last week. He was like number 15 projected still on most boards, odds board. He was still like 10 or 12. And I just think he's playing so much better. There was no course setup issue. I think that Wyndham Clark's game can translate to any golf course. It's power, it's streaky with the irons, and it's a great short game. Pretty much translates to anywhere, right? Now, I know he does like to favor a left-to-right ball. We know that. But he can work it the other way. Doesn't like to. Also interesting, I think it's kind of cool. You know, he said he got invited to Augusta 5 times before this year, right? And said no to him each time. Just so that he could, you know, balls, be a little bit cocky and say, hey, I'm only going when I make it there. I like that attitude. It is kind of Brooks Koepka in. And, you know, we do need to replace these guys in a way. And Jake Knapp maybe taking over for Cam Smith. Maybe Wyndham Clark's going to take over for Koepka. Now, for Xander, he's been playing great this year. He's so close, right? We can see it. Man, just a terrible putt on 17, just a misread. I think he hit it too hard there. But if he makes that and then beats Scotty in the playoff, this is a whole different conversation. However, I do think he is going to win a major. I'm not worried about the 13 runner-ups that he's got. I just think that just shows consistency in the top end of his game. If his swing, he's working with Como now, I saw.
Yes.
If that continues to get better over the next 2 weeks, you got to put him right up there on the first page again at Augusta. And Brian Harman continues to say, guys, I don't care where you price me on the odds, where you price me on DraftKings. I'm going to continue to make birdies, and I'm going to continue to be under-owned and compete. Yeah. And you know what? Take his waggles, take everything with it. He's a Patrick Cantlay-esque player. He's going to annoy more than are going to like him. I'm okay with that if that'll keep ownership down.
Yeah, compete. Brian Harman just competes. And I think courses like TPC Sawgrass, one of the things that I noticed, and really you could probably put this into play this week as well because he's in the field. The really long players, you look at Wyndham Clark and Xander during that final round, and even Scotty, they can barely ever hit driver out there. It's mostly like, how many 3 irons did Wyndham Clark hit? How many fairway medals did Xander and Scottie Scheffler take off the tee? Driver is too long at that place, and they are too long. But when you're Brian Harman and you can still not hit those fairway runoffs and you have that thing on an absolute string with accuracy, those type of courses play to a huge advantage of Brian Harman. Like the first and the 10th hole all week, guys were laying back, sort of taking iron because they wanted to hit the fairway. Brian Harman just stripes a drive 310 and he's got like 80 yards left in where those other guys have 150. I think it's a huge advantage for him. I agree with you. I think the move from Xander, just to touch on with Chris Como, he was the last man on the range almost every day, working extremely hard. He's seeing results slowly creep in. What I was super, like, I walked away impressed with Xander was his attitude about the whole thing. Like, they asked him, he was smiling through it all, right, in the media center. He was very open. He was very honest. He was very pleased with his game. And you know what? He talked about player involvement and the PIF thing, and he just kind of laughed it all off as if to say, I'm in my own little world right now, and all this outside noise, I don't hear it. Like, I'm just focused on me, and I really liked it. I think he's going to do big things with a major. In Como and Brandel, I listen to Brandel talk a lot about what Chris Como did, and his teaching style is very much in the line of Butch Harmon, and yeah, it's not super technical from what Brandel said, and it's not looking at all aspects. It's reinforcing confidence. So he'll sit there and watch you hit golf shots and just say, that's amazing. That's one of the best iron shots I've ever seen. And what that is doing as a teacher to a player who has all the ability is just reinforcing that positive energy within that player that they are great, that they're really not working on something, that already what they're doing is working. So yeah, I think that's helpful for Brandel. And Wyndham Clark, you nailed it. There was a ton of talk in the media center. It wasn't, I know Feinberg said it first, but everyone was thinking the same thing. Like, this guy has it. This guy has just enough mix of don't give a fuck and also I'm super intense and care. Like, the stuff that I don't need to care about, I'm not going to let it affect me, but I'm also going to put everything out there on the course. He doesn't get enough credit for how much of a bomber he is. There are some significantly long, like, they're the longest players in the world that were playing. Ludvig, like, you look at the board that they have next to the range and carry distance, longest drive of the week, all these stats that they put up from every player on the range, and it's all Wyndham Clark. Like, he's longer than just about anybody on the PGA Tour when he reaches back right now. There are still some inconsistencies that he needs to clean up, but just guts, man, and I love to see it. One of the other ones in kind of transition here. So I had Rory and I felt good about this ticket. And I know no one was on Rory last week. And I heard some things early on in the week that he had cleaned up a little bit of that iron. Like, he had figured out what he was doing wrong with the wedge and the approach play and found a fix for it. And what my reasoning was is he's the number one player in the world off the tee and has been for a long time. He figured something out with Brad Faxon and the putting at Bay Hill. And now if he can just put together a decent approach week, he's going to be right there. I was so electrically fired up and juiced about that bet on Thursday. And then I get back to the media center and I was very surprised by this, Jason. So the PGA Tour social team basically was right behind me. There's like seven of these guys. Guys and gals, I should say. They're right behind me. And all of a sudden, I see all the screens of everyone in the media center looking at a PGA Tour tweet. And I pull it up, and we're all there, headphones in, watching this 8-minute long video of Rory and Jordan and what happened. And I was shocked these people behind me put that out there, because that's not something I really thought that they would do. I thought that it would be classic PGA Tour. Let's bury this. We don't want to bury Rory. But I just knew in that moment that was going to affect Rory. He absorbs. He's like a sponge. He hears it all. He digests it all. He feels it all. And when there is negative golf, you know, live from the players, and they're spending 30 minutes talking about a rule situation with Rory when Spieth and Victor Hovland, two of the, you know, more respected faces in the game, are essentially questioning where he's dropping the ball in terms of, you know, playing honorably. I knew that was going to really negatively impact him. And where I just spoke to Wyndham Clark's ability to put the blinders on and just focus on golf, I feel like that kind of stuff just sinks in and lingers with Rory McIlroy and always has.
Yeah, this next, I'll call it second phase of his career, totally agree. Even in the beginning, when he was winning his first batch of majors, there were still times where you're like, yeah, question mark. I guess where it really started to come into to play for me, where I really started to realize that, you know, we're not going to call him, you know, doesn't have mental strength. He certainly does. But like you said, he's maybe an empath, maybe too much of an empath, taking on these emotions of people and around him. But with the back nine at Augusta, when he coughed it up, right, you know, he wasn't able to put it back on the tracks. Now, again, coming to this, I totally agree. I watched the whole thing. I happened to have clear my schedule Thursday morning. I knew these guys were in our featured groups. I couldn't wait to watch them. You know, Spieth, as you know, my guy, never bet on the TPC Sawgrass. Another story. I watched the whole thing. I think that it was pretty clear Rory felt like he was doing the right thing. And inevitably, I think he did. But the contentiousness of the situation and the way that Hovland and Jordan were speaking to him during it, and the way it sounded to people like me and you that listened to it, Rory could tell that they weren't happy, and that definitely happened. Totally agree.
Anytime, I mean, you've played golf long enough, and we've all been in these situations, and anytime, like, the one side of it goes, like, I don't know, but you, Jason, you do what you feel is right. You pretty much know how I feel about what you're doing in that moment. Like, you know, I'm somewhat questioning it. We couldn't really see what was going on. We could see, you know, Jordan's very animated, so you could kind of see the way he's gesturing that, like, I don't know about this. And there was a situation on the 18th hole as well, which was their ninth of the day, which I'm standing directly behind the tee box. And to me, Rory played a big high draw. It looked like it covered a good bit of land, but Jordan, I think, called him out there and was questioning if he was going to re-tee. And Harry was like, no, I know exactly where it crossed up by the stake. And I think that sort of planted the seed. And it was, I think, part and parcel because Spieth was struggling. Hovland was struggling. Both didn't play well that day. And Rory's tearing the place up. And now they're taking what they deem to be a second potentially questionable drop during the round, and he's kind of there to protect the field. You know, the handshake post round was very cold. Jordan, I'm standing there, that they have like a they call it a media scrum area, where they go there, they talk to Todd Lewis or Damon Hack, and then they basically put them in front of a screen for all, you know, the media members to ask questions to, and everyone's waiting. Jordan and Hovland, like, wouldn't even make eye contact. They're like, nope. No, they just kept walking. Not today. And then Jordan talked the following day and said that he thought that, you know, I was right there, that he thought Rory did the right thing. But, you know, 24 hours later, I think he'd cooled down a bit. I think that he wanted the controversy to just go away at that point. So he said what he had to say. But you could pretty much tell in the moment how he felt about what was happening.
Jordan is never going to be shy about the way he feels, whether it's about his golf shot, his own golf game, or a rule situation. We've already seen Hovland at this golf course in this situation before, so we know Hovland's going to be right there. Yeah, going back to Rory taking the improper drop. On 18, you had a better line than me, but what I will say is Spieth both times suggested somebody from media told him that Rory was taking wrong lines on both situations. So I found that to be interesting, whether it was the no laying up guys or maybe somebody else. But I did find that interesting that Jordan brought that up in both situations. Like you mentioned, almost right after Rory hit it in the water, Jordan's like, are you going to re-tee? So clearly Jordan had the indication that it didn't cross at either time where he dropped. But Yeah, and no surprise to see Jordan kind of skip out on that interview, give himself 24 hours to drum up a good positive spin on it like Jordan would. Interesting. And Jordan, what's weird is that Jordan was playing good up until 18.
Yeah.
And if you look at 18 through 8, he was 4 over. So not only did it affect Rory's play for the rest of the weekend, but I think it really sent Jordan off onto tilt, truthfully. He'll never tell us that, of course, but I really do think it put Jordan on tilt for the rest of the week.
So speaking of where another storyline that centers around these two players, I wrote a little piece on Saturday about how I feel like the game and the PGA Tour could use like a rivalry. They could use some contentiousness. They could use some conflict within its players, because I think casual fans, just being around them, in my sense, first of all, Jason, and you've seen this at events, we are so caught in this circle of golf Twitter and picks and everything, and Jordan's not playing great, that I think sometimes I forget how big of a star this guy is. When he's coming near you, everyone around you is, you hear it. Here comes Spieth's group. Where's Spieth's group at? Like, they refer to this group of Rory McIlroy and Victor Hovland, top 4 players in the world. Everyone, the masses are referring to it as Spieth's group. Where's Spieth? Is Spieth coming up next? Here comes Spieth. It's all him. And he's such a star. And I think that the game, you know, when you look at Tiger versus Phil and Jack versus Trevino and Brooks and Bryson, a little bit of contentiousness and not disrespectful, but maybe I want to beat this guy. Like, the game could use a little bit of that from time to time. And it's felt a little bit like a buddies tour in a sense, where they all seem to be such best friends now. All the guys, they took all our bad guys, right? And I think you, like, people want to choose a side. And this was my point. In any sort of sporting match, whether it's an NCAA tournament game, whether it's the Super Bowl, whether it's golf, you want to watch two guys compete at the highest level, and you want a reason to pick a side. And these two figures, I think, are perfect for that. They've had this sort of Augusta background very early on. Right after you mentioned Rory blew it at Augusta, guess who turned pro the next year and won it as a 21-year-old a few years later? Jordan Spieth. Rory has not won a major since Spieth won. Spieth has now won 3. He's chasing him to that point. There's also, and what I wanted to sort of parlay this into, is Spieth's on a flight this morning between TPC Sawgrass and the Valspar this week, where he's competing to the Bahamas to be sort of the voice of the PGA Tour in these PIF negotiations. When Rory McIlroy resigned from his position on the policy board last year, guess who took his spot? Jordan Spieth. Yeah. So they're synonymously linked sort of throughout their career. They're both like, who has more Ryder Cup starts in this past Ryder Cup of any American player on the team? It's Spieth. Who has the most European starts? It's Rory. So this matchup, you know, can be sort of built up to be one guy versus another. And I wanted to ask you about the responsibility that Spieth has attending this meeting with Yasser. I think Tiger is there, so I'm sure he'll shoulder a good bit of the burden. But do you think this is something that could negatively impact Jordan moving forward, taking on such a large role on these Zoom calls and board meetings and anything outside of the world of golf? Because it seemed to take that toll on Rory last year, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would go as far as to say it's probably more than just your opinion. It's probably reality. I think Rory, in effect, told us this. I don't know if you've got a chance to watch Full Swing yet, but I've watched the first 3 episodes, and the first 3 episodes are basically Rory telling us this, getting up to the point of the news dropping of the agreement on June 6th, where Rory was totally blindsided. And you saw Rory go from politician to, I don't give a rat's ass about anything that happens.
Yeah, dude. Totally. So,
which is crazy, right? I mean, and he was absolutely stabbed in the back by Monahan,
right?
At least by what they're showing us on Full Swing. I don't think Rory's going to lie. So I will back Rory here and say, okay, he probably feels absolutely slighted. He went out and was a sacrificial lamb, biggest star in the game that plays every week, right? Tiger's obviously a needle mover, but Rory is the guy, has been for a couple of years. And for him to come out and be like, anti-lib, take that stance. Yeah, stab in the back. So I think Jordan taking his place, he's coming in a different spot than Rory right now. We're Absolutely. Trying to get back to unification. So I think that may have a little less stress on Jordan than it does Rory. Rory had to be so public about it, where if anything needs to be public about this, Tiger's going to take over that, right? Tiger didn't help Rory at all.
Yeah.
Tiger now taking this position and basically being what we're going to call the CEO of PGA Tour Enterprises, more or less. What is he, the chairman or something like that?
Yeah.
It's got to take a lot of weight off of Spieth and Cantlay, for example. Now, interesting to know, Cantlay was supposed to play Valspar and then withdrew due to it. So interesting, but I think Cantlay and Spieth are two different points in their game. Cantlay, I think he's playing much better. He's gotten into contention here in the last at least three starts if we go to the Genesis Invitational. Whereas Spieth, really struggling. Missed the cut at the Players. Pretty awful at API. DQ at Genesis.
Yeah, forgot about that.
We're not going to play in Texas, so we've got to get something before we head down to Augusta. And his stats aren't even that bad. From 15 to 20 feet, Joe, the Magic Beans are back. He's ranked, I think, number one or two on tour again this season in terms of putting from 15 to 20. We love that. Off the tee looks okay. The irons are just poor. And when he was going through his best in the world run in 2015 and 16, the irons were top 10.
Yes.
So if we're just transitioning quickly to his game, I think that's why he's saying, even though I've got this meeting with Yasser and Tiger, I need to come to Valspar. Valspar has been, or Copperhead has been, a semi-comp course to Augusta. Now, I've played Copperhead, and I was at Augusta last year. Of course, they're so vastly different, but positional golf with long iron approaches are common themes between the two. So if you want to get your game going in that 4 to 7 iron range, I can totally understand why Copperhead could be a good tune-up for Augusta.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about it in the course preview. Jason, you're certainly the expert. You've played here before, but I'm going to give you sort of my quick notes on the Copperhead course at Innisbrook Resort. So Larry Packard, 1971 design. They've had the PGA Tour tournament here. It was the Tampa Bay Open or something like that?
Yeah,
Tampa Bay Classic starting in the year 2000. So this will be the 22nd. There was 2 years where they missed. They missed a year for 9/11. They missed a year for COVID. So they've had this event consistently. Ryan Stewart is the superintendent. He has been the superintendent for almost every one of these events, 17 years now. You mentioned sort of the long iron play is a premium here, especially from, I would say, 175 yards and above. It's not an overly long course, 7,340 yards on the scorecard, and a unique par 71 with a 5 par 3s and four par fives, I'm tripping myself up with words there. The fairways are not overly wide. I would say it's very much a strategic sort of plotters type golf course off the tee. Find yourself in the fairway. So last year the big thing was they took the rough from a 3-inch rye overseed to a 3.75. The GCSAA fact sheet says that is going to be once again in play. And due to sort of, you know, from living down here, it's been as a wet of a winter as we've ever had. I would expect that to be fairly lush and thick like it was in spots at TPC Sawgrass last week. They also share a similar green complexes with the sort of POA overseed on the greens, which we saw last week as well, which is also rather unique in terms of Florida courses, but much like TPC Scottsdale, obviously like Sawgrass that we just saw. Good run of sort of winners here and real ball strikers who have shown the ability to compete year over year. Funny you mentioned the Augusta comp, because I heard so many people mention that last week just in the media center who don't cover it from a gambling perspective, but they were just like, this place is the closest thing to Augusta. I heard multiple people talking about that at a table during lunch, and I'm like, is it really? And I started to think about it a little bit, and it does feel very much like a Georgia or a Carolina course that is somehow positioned right outside of Tampa, Florida. What's your vibe from sort of being there? Does that make sense to you? Do you have anything else to sort of add there on the golf course?
Yeah, funny enough, so I call Palm Harbor, or this area where the course is located, I call it home now. From New England, if you couldn't catch that, Palm Harbor. But a lot of New Englanders down here. Funny enough, it is legitimately the back of the golf course is a half a mile from the Gulf. You'd never think of it, right? Because you can't see any beach or anything like that. But yeah, Clearwater Beach, one of the best beaches in the country, is like maybe 10 minutes from the golf course. But it plays like a tight Carolina Augusta National. First hole, you know, is the easiest hole in the golf course. So if you're starting on one, you've got to make a birdie there. It's by far the easiest. However, after that second hole, maybe you can take out driver. Third hole, you're definitely not. Fourth hole, long par three. That's the other theme in this golf course. You are not going to get a wedge into a par three this week. Last week, one, maybe even two in certain circumstances.
Yeah.
Where they put the tee. This week, no, you're going to get them all like the eighth hole at TPC Sawgrass last week. They're basically all going to be 190 to 230 with bunkers and everything else in play. But then in addition to that, the holes are difficult to drive on. So when you get to five, that long uphill par five, it's like 600 yards. Not only is it a long hole, but it's a difficult driving hole with the way it sits. There's a bunker that sits right at about 295, 300 yards playing uphill. So a lot of the guys that comes into play, plus there's trees over to the right. So you see something similar again with six. The way I look at it is there's really only two spots to hit driver on the front nine. So that means you're going to hit a lot of 250 off the tee. Means you're going to have 200 to 210 in. Guys that are playing good with their long irons, certainly that's why we see the ball striker premium that we've had. And I don't know if a lot of people know this or are new to the industry or maybe forget, but one of the best terms to come out of the called the golf Twitter verse is called Keeganing, right? Well, it actually happened here at Valspar where Keegan was the first round leader and then I'm missing the cut the next day. That stuff can happen at Valspar if you're not careful here at the Copperhead course. If you're on with your ball striking, it can make a couple of putts, you can score. But if you're just off a little bit, I mean, forget about six. Well, I call it the magnet hole because you can't even see the fairway where you want to land it. A lot of those circumstances, back nine, at least three holes, very similar to that, where you can't even really see your landing area when you're hitting your drive. 16, another great hole. That's probably the toughest hole on the course. You got water lining right and trees left. Very small window to hit a driver. Yeah, it is. It's a really good positional golf course. I've enjoyed playing it, to be honest with you. It's fun time to go out there.
Yeah, you know, we didn't mention the snake pit, of course, the ridiculously hard closing hole stretch. But one thing I noticed, Jason, I would say definitely about PGA National and TPC Sawgrass. There are, if you can get into position off the tee, meaning hit the fairway, almost every hole turns into a birdie hole because you've got a short wedge in to accessible pins, typically with slopes that will feed down to the hole location to give you roughly 6 feet for birdie. They're all birdie holes, but there also can be double bogey holes in that there's hazard everywhere. There's water on all 18 holes that comes into play. There's OB at PGA National. There's re-tees all the time from players. This place doesn't really have that hazard on every hole, but it also doesn't present you with, if you're in the fairway, you're always going to have inside 10 feet for birdie. There are a ton of holes that you mentioned that you're going to have 200 yards in, that you're essentially playing for the middle of the green, and you're getting through, you're playing for par, I would say, on like half the holes, and then you're sort of picking and choosing your spots to really get aggressive, but an understanding that being over aggressive can penalize you, not in the same way that we've seen, you know, bad shots penalized in recent rounds, but it's just that everything is slightly more difficult. Even shots from the fairway to an elevated pin or a tucked pin, you know, they brought another thing they did last year. It was in this fact sheet is they basically reduced the intermediate cut around the greens. So before, while you had maybe 6 yards of this intermediate cut where if you rolled off the green, you would get stuck in that and have an easy up and down. Now what they've done is they've brought it to within 3 feet of the green. So it was at 72 inches. Now it's 21 inches. So it's actually less than 2 feet. So you roll just off the green, and now all of a sudden you're in very thick rough with a really tough up and down, versus before you could kind of have this intermediate cut, which it was pretty easy. Now you're in 4-inch gnarly growing sideways, lush rough that is very difficult to get up and down. So it's just really hard in a different way, but I would say a more consistent level of hard that I think the players probably prefer, rather than such a wide spectrum of very small shot creating such a massive penalty like you saw at Sawgrass.
For sure. No doubt about that. And I think one of the other things, maybe a little bit more so at this golf course than the other two, bunkering on this golf course is definitely the biggest hazard. It kind of takes the place of the water, like you suggested. You know, I'm thinking in the back of my head, I'm just trying to think of a hole that doesn't have bunkers guarding the green. And I think maybe one of the only holes is the sixth hole. No, sixth hole even has that front left. So, yeah, as you can see, I'm struggling to figure out a hole that doesn't have heavily guarded bunkers around it. So definitely bring that sand game. I know it may be a little hard to quantify in the statistics, but you certainly need all of your types of game. What I do like about Valsboro, about Copperhead, we can get winners of all types of game, though, right? We've seen talk about Adam Hadwin. We've talked about Jordan Spieth, Sam Burns, a guy that, you know, really doesn't have that much of an iron game, or when he won here, didn't have that much of an iron game. So interesting. I thought a player I wanted to bring up with you as we talk into going in to talk about players, Cameron Young coming here, I believe maybe it's his first time, kind of a similar player to Sam Burns. So that I'm definitely interested in this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go ahead. I'm going to bring up the board right now. We'll talk through some guys and their odds. All right, here's the board. If you're with us on YouTube, Xander Schauffele, your runner-up last week, probably the most consistent top 10 finish guy on the PGA Tour this year outside of Scottie Scheffler, 7.5-1 this week to win the Valspar Championship. You mentioned Patrick Cantlay with Drew. I think that was probably going to be the other guy inside 10-1. But you have Sam Burns, who was your 2021, your 2022 champion at the Valspar, and a T6 last year. Old Sammy B loves this place off a super low one, just like was really cool to watch him grind to make that cut on Friday. And then he went out and lit the course on fire on Saturday morning. Spieth 16-1. JT is 16-1. Both those two have had some success around this place. Brian Harman coming off a runner-up is 22-1. Finau 22. Cameron Young, who you just mentioned, I'll stop there at 25-1. Why are you liking Cameron Young this week?
Yeah, I don't necessarily know that I loved him upon first look because he hasn't shown that he can get it done for us yet, right? He's gotten close so many times. We've got the talent level. I think it's the type of player that I'm more interested in. I feel he's got a Sam Burns-esque type of player in him, except he's not nearly as good a putter, right? That's the one thing that Burns has that I think a lot of these long ball guys don't have, is a very consistent or consistent good putter. And that's why I think he can really compete here at Valspar. If he gets, when you get into those 6 and 5 and 7 irons, strokes gained becomes more difficult against the field, right? Because it's harder shots. The average proximity is a bit wider. We know that he's not as good with his wedges, right? That's why his strokes gained approach numbers are not as good as, you know, say Scotty Scheffler's or some of the best players in the world. But when you get outside of that 150-yard bucket where a ton of those strokes gained are made, Burns actually ranks up there decently. He's also pretty hot with his irons right now. So, yeah, if I had to compare the two, certainly I would be leaning Burns over Young here. But the type of player that Young is, very powerful, you know, is going to be able to reach probably these par fives all in two. If he can figure out that putter, I think it's definitely a course that he can compete at. We see Tony Finau, another similar type of player, obviously can't putt, top 5 here in one of his 4 starts. So, again, I like these power players, but obviously picking the week in which they're going to putt well has been problematic, so to speak, for all of us, not just for me or for you, but for all of us here.
Yeah, I'm really sort of I think I'm more inclined to go with the power players here. Spieth and Justin Thomas are intriguing to me because they both have incredible course history here. Spieth with the T3 last year, JT's last 3 years are T10, T3, and T13. both of them are struggling with a when they miss off the tee, they miss big. And Justin Thomas has been dealing with this sort of low snap hook that has just bitten him, where he can play great for nine holes and it will come into play at the worst time. I think he went in the water on 12 at Bay Hill four consecutive days. He went in the water on like somehow found the water on 10 at Sawgrass, which like isn't even in play. So when it goes bad, he's making double or triple bogey. And I wonder if maybe they like it here because it's not quite as penal. It gives them an opening to try and make par when they have a really bad tee shot. And is it going to be hard? Yes, but these two are magicians around the green and have some of the best hands and ability to pull a rabbit out of a hat when you have to get up and down for par in a tricky situation. And I wonder if that's why it suits them so well. Sam Burns, Tony Finau, Cameron Young. I feel like just like you, they're all very similar players. They're all great off the tee. Tony Finau has been really sharp on approach. I was actually shocked to see how good he's been. I have him number three in the field from 150 to 225 yards. But the difference, Jason, and you touched on it, putting for birdie. So 4 to 10 feet. I looked at the putting stats from 4 to 10 feet. Cameron Young is terrible. Tony Finau is worse, and Sam Burns is a top 10 player in this field. So when these guys give themselves opportunities, Burns is the one that's cashing it in at an insane rate. Now, he's roughly half the odds of the other two, but I think they possess a very similar skill profile, but it's really that ability to consistently hole putts when you need them most and you give yourself opportunities that have me sort of gravitating toward a player like Burns, who throughout his career like was always super volatile. It was like, can Sam Burns win any tournament? Yes, but he's missing one out of every three cuts. This he has really been quite consistent. And even when he's not playing well, you're still getting like a T30 or a T40 out of Burns. So making his bad rounds less bad, but still having that upside of I can go 8 under par any given day has really sort of helped him.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. In the DFS world, right, Sam Burns has been profitable the last 2 weeks, even though he's gone 45th, 30th. His points scored because of the amount of birdies that he's putting up. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like that, obviously, I think the biggest difference between straight-up sports betting or golf betting and DFS is Burns can give you a return coming in 45th and 30th.
Yeah.
Top 40 bets on Sam Burns aren't going to pay you enough money. So that's, I think, one of the big differences. Just going back to Spieth and Thomas, just to kind of piggyback off of they can't get into too much trouble here. I think one of the biggest reasons for that is because the holes that bring trouble into play, you have to hit 3 wood or less on. They really don't have a spot to hit driver on. You know, 16 might be the only one. And it was 16 that cost Spieth the tournament 2 years ago when he had that T3. Last year, when he lost to Taylor Moore.
Yeah.
And Adam Shank, both those guys threw up the tournament. I can't believe Taylor Moore won. I had a huge Spieth thing. Another story, another time. Nonetheless, that's what I think it goes into is when they're taking out driver, where they're taking it out, you can't get into too much trouble where it's really going to cost you 2 strokes, right? Not just the 1 penalty stroke, but also have to drop in a bad spot. There's really not that at this course. So that's why I think you see the consistency from Spieth and Thomas here. I mean, combined, I'm looking at, you know, since 2013, they have combined 10 starts, 8 of 10 with like 7 top 10s between the two of them.
Wow. Yeah, it's impressive.
And this is the only missed cut for Spieth was 2018 when his entire game was in shambles.
Yes.
And for Thomas in 2017, you know, really before he kind of emerged. So for me, I know these guys aren't playing great, but we know that TPC Sawgrass has the most volatility of any golf course for all of the golfers. So for me, I don't really care about that missed cut. These are two guys that I will have as part of my lineups this week. And certainly 16 to 1, that's where I actually probably would rather go Burns at around 12 to 1. I think Burns is more primed to win than these two other guys at this point.
Okay, what about the middle of the board here? So you've got Sung Jae in the midst of struggles at 28-1. Min Woo, 33. Nick Taylor's been playing fantastic golf at 35-1. Eric Cole, 35. Hadwin, I saw you in a little, giving some restaurant and local park to take the kiddos tips to Mrs. Hadwin earlier. Gim, unbelievable run for Doug Gim. His last five starts are T16 or better for Doug Gim. Keith Mitchell, Christian Bezuidenhout, Keegan Bradley, Aaron Rye, Bo Hostler, Sepp Straka. These are the players. Mav McNeely, there's some 60s and 66s out there. These are the players in sort of the middle of the odds board, Jason. Is there one guy that you've sort of keyed in on this week?
Yeah, let's talk about Doug Gim for a second. We knew when he came out of UTexas that he had a lot of talent. One thing I love, though, he's got a great personality out there. We saw it at Waste Management, getting the crowd so riled up, maybe the most riled up that we're all week. Yeah. Then again, last week at Sawgrass, he's got a little bit of the flair for dramatic that maybe we haven't quite yet to see because he hasn't lived up to his full potential. We're starting to see that now. Joe, he's shorter odds than Keegan Bradley to win a golf tournament.
Yeah.
Keegan Bradley's top 30 player in the world. I don't know that I'm ready to say Doug Gim is top 30 in the world, but certainly you've got to respect. It's not just one part of his game. Every part of his game looks decent. I mean, that chip on 17 was really fun to watch last week and him go through the motion. So hard to bet against him, but you got to think that the regression will come at some point. I mean, the form, we haven't seen this in his entire career yet. So, I mean, 16, 16, 8, 12, 13, Joe, that's good for anybody, let alone Doug Gim. So I am behind him, but maybe with a little bit of caution. Keith Mitchell, I think he was on a bender. You were there. Did you see him on Sunday? Was he just a little maybe hungover?
No, when? At the Players? No, I didn't catch any of that.
I mean, the front
nine. I see you finished 73rd.
Yeah, dead last. And the front nine on Sunday was 42, okay. I think. Yeah, so, yeah, I'm pretty sure he must have enjoyed the Jacksonville bars. So, with that being said, speaking of Valspar, we talked about Cantley, kind of where I kind of noticed these guys. Keith Mitchell Monday qualified for Valspar when he first broke out. And this guy's came T12, so we just missed that next start. But obviously parlayed that into Korn Ferry Tour Championship at the end of the season, got Korn Ferry Tour status. Then got obviously out of the PGA Tour next season. So,
wow.
Obviously, Mitchell loves this place because of that, kind of spearheaded his career. 9-19 before his kind of Players blow up. Loves it here in Florida. No, he won the Cognizant a couple of years ago. Played great at Bay Hill. Couple of top tens here. I'd like to see his odds a little bit longer, given him coming off of last place finish last week. But still, nonetheless, like it. Let's talk about Sung Jae for a second. Almost had Willie Wilcox, his caddy, coming to play my course locally, but we're closed on Mondays. So we sent him down to Clearwater, down to Bel Air, really great country club. But yeah, I talked to Willie for a minute here today. And I'll be honest with you, I get the sense from him, and I've been looking at the stats. I think Sung Jae is coming out of a slump. We know that he lived in Tampa for 2 years during the COVID stretch. He lived at one of the resorts and played Copperhead quite a bit during that time. So I think Sung Jae at 28-1, maybe slightly shorter than what I'd like in his current form, but a guy that elite talent, ball striking is incredible. Around the green game is elite. So if he can wake up that putter, again, maybe obviously half the odds of a guy like Keith Mitchell or Doug Gim, but certainly I think Sung Jae is coming out of a slump.
Yeah, I'm looking now, T31 at the Players, but he gained 6 strokes tee to green. Arnold Palmer, T18, gained 3.5. So maybe you're right. Maybe you're right about Sung Jae. I do like Keith Mitchell this week. He's one of the bets that I've made at 50-1. I got him second off the tee. I've got him second in greens and regulation. He loves Florida. He's got a lot to play for, he's kind of flirting this line of the top 50 right now, which is important, as we know, because it gets you signature event status. The other one, and I sort of mentioned him off the top, but I think he threw a 6-iron in the middle of the lake at 18 last week. But I don't mind Adam Hadwin. Plays obviously where he's got his win. He has great course history here with some really good finishes outside of that. T4 at the Genesis. He's got another top 4 this year. So there are signs of life out of Adam Hadwin. And I just look at, you know, maybe not the worst thing that could have happened to him at the Players, like a total embarrassing moment that I think resets you and refocuses you coming to an event where you do have very positive vibes this week. I think he's got the right understanding of this golf course and what it takes to succeed around here. And it's just about going out there and doing it. And Adam Hadwin has a lot to play for this year. Canadian President's Cup team. He's on the outside looking in at the moment. I think his buddy Nick Taylor is passing him on the odds board and is basically a shoe-in on that team. But these Canadian players, Hadwin, Connors, Hughes, Svensson, Taylor, they want desperately to be a part of this team and be a part of Mike Weir's President's Cup team with their opportunity to play in Canada this year. So a lot on the table to play for Adam Hadwin this summer. The motivation has to be high, and we know what a good course fit this is for him. He's another guy that I have not bet yet, but we'll likely see and continue to monitor that number in the betting market as the week progresses.
Absolutely. You're fully behind you on that one.
Okay, let's look. Give me a long shot here. I'm not going to name all the guys. Nice to see Daniel Berger here is 80-1. Taylor Montgomery's playing some decent golf. Ryan Fox, I've seen some people like this week. Is there anyone? Give me like one guy or maybe two, Jason, that you really like in terms of a bomb this week.
All right, let's start with Sam Ryder. Set the record for birdies in a Players' Championship last week with 27. I think Rory ended up matching him. But still, a guy that has actually played really well at the Cognizant a couple of weeks ago, he threw a couple in the water there on the bear trap. I believe it was Sunday, either Sunday or Saturday afternoon, where he was, you know, top 10. Again, top 10 at the Players, and threw a couple on the water on the back nine. This guy is really close to breaking through, Joe, and I think that yes, Valspar is a different golf course, but clearly likes Florida. I believe he's a Florida State guy as well. Went to FSU, if I'm not mistaken. Matt Smith, Sammy Knoll, if you're watching, if I got it wrong, tell me. But I'm pretty sure you've told me in the past that Ryder is an FSU guy. So definitely behind him. Then two other guys. One guy that got his start, one of his first PGA Tour starts here at the Valspar was Akshay Bhatia. Boomer bust guy, not playing well right now, but I'm going to stick with him in some lineups because if he makes the cut, he's going to get inside the top 40. So if you are looking to bet, look at the top 40 market for Akshay Bhatia. Now, one last guy, since we're sticking with the theme here of Tampa or the Valspar, a guy that has played really well the last 4 weeks, made each of the last four cuts, almost won in Puerto Rico, and is from right here in Clearwater, right here in Palm Harbor, Jimmy Stanger.
Oh,
I love this guy this week.
Love him too.
I think he could get top 10. If some of the stars, like if Xander is like, man, I just want to get to Augusta on these good feels and hightails of that for Friday, I could see Stanger competing this week. The guy has got a Jake Knapp type flow. I think he's got some marketability.
He's a vibe, dude. I saw him. I followed him closely. There's like a fans love him. He's super engaging. Like, coming off every green, you know, some guys are kind of like just jerks out there, like fist pumping all the kids, like interacting with people, like, you know, Stanger after his rounds, like signing autographs immediately, like just in such a good mood. And you could tell so grateful to be given this opportunity. Like when you're there and you see so many guys that come off the course angry and upset, it's when you see a young player just enthusiastic and like embracing the moment and the fans, even when he like maybe didn't have his best stuff. It's just kind of brings a smile to your face. And he's someone that absolutely lit up the course last week from just a personality standpoint.
It's awesome. Love to hear that. Fully backed him this week. Got him right in maybe the middle of the pack in terms of projections, 6,900 on DraftKings. He's going to be a big part of what I got going on for sure.
Good stuff, man. Well, listen, I appreciate you spending an hour with me here, breaking everything down. Tell everyone else what all you got going on the remainder of this week and where they can catch it.
Yeah. So for Rainmakers purposes, I do all of my Rainmakers work at Lucky Trader. So find them on Twitter at Lucky Trader HQ. We have the only PGA Rainmakers optimizer in the world, I guess I could say, theoretically speaking, because we are the only one. So if you are playing that game and you are playing multiple lineups, or even if you have last year's cards and they are taking too long for you to make each week, I've got the tool to help you with that. So check it out. Contact me if you need to. Poured my heart and soul into that product and absolutely love it. It just actually produced a $15,000 winner last week at the rare tier. Really excited for one of my buddies to get it done. One of his biggest scores, he said, in 10 years of playing DFS. So happy to be a part of that. So check out all my work there. Of course, if you want more picks, I do a Straight to the Picks podcast, just a quick form right here on X at the end of the week. I love listening to all of you guys at the beginning, and what I do at the end is just give you my straight picks. I don't need to redub everything you guys do. You guys do it better than me, so I just go straight to my picks. You can find it there. And I've got a couple more things coming down the road. See, Joe, I love this industry, man. It is totally blossoming. I love being a part of it. We had 30,000 unique entries in the Millie Maker last week. 30,000 people making a PGA DFS golf lineup, man. It is not dead. It is growing. Golf betting coming into the foreground. Underdog doing some amazing stuff with their pickups. Mm-hmm. We can't do it here in Florida right now. They'll get there. But yeah, it's really just a great time. I love it. I love the ability to bet on so many different areas. So any area that you liked or you want advice on or you want to hear my take, go ahead and find me on Twitter at DFSGolfer23. Always happy to chat some golf.
Yeah, you honestly are always happy to chat with people. And there are so many people that I think out there who may watch these shows that may be reluctant to reach out or ask questions. I can remember reaching out to you 3-4 years ago, and you were always quick to respond. You've always sort of been an open book and trying to educate people and being transparent and not hiding anything from a picks perspective, which I think is important to understand from an audience and people that, frankly, you're competing with at a DFS level. Is you don't want to give disingenuous information at any point, and you've always been really good about that. I continue to wish you the best of luck in everything, man. Thank you for joining the show. Enjoy the tournament this week. Take your boy out there, have some fun, and thanks again. We'll talk soon, Jason.
Absolutely, Joe. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, see you, buddy. All right, guys. Awesome to talk to Jason. As always, make sure to give him a follow, DFSGolfer23 on Twitter. Thank you all for joining the show. So I just wanted to, before we get out of here, I just wanted to recap quickly sort of what the week was like in the media center. So here's kind of my rundown. I got there, was issued my credential, and walked into the room, and like, if I'm being honest, you immediately kind of feel like the new guy in the room, right? Which I think is normal. No one did anything abnormal to make me feel that way, but I think they're, you know, I'm a big energy person, and you could feel that people were my name is on the thing, and they're, who is that? And they're looking it up, and oh God, it's a gambling guy from Twitter. How did he get in here? Type of environment. And hopefully I was able to smooth some of that over throughout the week. I tried not to step on any toes while still being able to get my feet wet, and I wanted to get the most out of it for the people that were following Rotoballer and myself. Thank you all for being a part of that journey with me. And I get my credential, and the person on the PGA Tour in charge of issuing them was skeptical, like a lot of the people, and frankly asked me right off the bat, think about your why, and why are you here? And, you know, I can appreciate that directness. I am okay with it. Some people may be put off by it. My wife is a very direct person, so I had an understanding of they're challenging me to answer this question properly. And the answer that I came up to it was, I can be a channel. So the PGA Tour, in terms of the product, in terms of the content opportunities that they have, in terms of the production, which when you're there and experience it firsthand, you see the volunteers and the build out and the amount of people that it takes to run an event like this and create this vast ocean of a resource, right? That is sport, that is competition, that is content, that is all these things. And you have kind of like, you know, in North Carolina, you have these little channels that feed into that ocean. And there are big ones with thousands of people on them. Your Golf Digest, your golf.coms, you know, your Barstool, they're all in the room. But I can sort of think I can be one of these channels, right? I have an audience. There were 800,000 people that engaged on my tweets over the weekend. There are 1,500 plus likes. There were 250 link clicks. I wrote and published 5 different articles. I did video content. 800,000 people engaged or saw things that I was writing. And this is my why. There is an audience out there that is thirsty for PGA Tour content and how to get there. There are many paths that can get people in travel with you on these channels to get to these vast oceans. And while my approach may be less traditional than some of the other ones and big golf media and journalists that have been there forever, it is no less important. I'm bringing eyeballs, I'm bringing people, and I'm bringing an engaged audience to the same ocean that is the PGA Tour. And I did my best to intentionally bring them on a different path than I think some people may choose within that room. And I really hope that that came through in some of the tweets. The more that you guys support and the more evidence that I can give them in future events to say, here's what I did and I think it works and I can be of value not only to Roto Baller, not only to the people that follow me on X or wherever it may be, but also to the PGA Tour and driving positive value for an audience, I think is extremely important. I'm grateful for all of you guys because none of it would have been possible without the support of each and every one of you. Thank you for checking out this show each and every week. This has once again been Preferred Lines. I'm out of here. I hope you all have a fantastic week at the Valspar. Long shots video out tomorrow. Full card up Wednesday. Power rankings are up now. You guys are the absolute best. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. I'm out of here. Peace.